second, 2001. This is an interview with Mary Zerini at her residence in Louisville, Kentucky. The interviewer is Betsy Brinson. Let's try again, Mary.
I was born December 30th, 1942, in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Okay, well, thank you, Mary, for agreeing to talk with me this morning in preparation for this panel that the Women's Political Caucus and, I guess, the Now chapter are co-sponsoring.
Well, I feel very honored to be interviewed for this.
Well, let's start, if we may, with a little bit about your biographical background, sort of your growing up, your early education,
your family. I grew up in Kankakee, Illinois.
How do you spell that?
K-A-N-K-A-K-E-E.
Okay, and I'll ask you that occasionally so the transcriber can get it on correctly.
Okay. Kankakee, Illinois, and it was a small rural town, and grew up there in the 50s in a family, all my family was there, my mother, my father, and my brother, who's 5 years older, and stayed there in Kankakee through high school, and then went on to Southern Illinois University. And at that time, the only reason I went was because my mother encouraged me to do that to get a husband. Mm-hmm. And so academics, I was a straight-A student, easy. I felt bored in school, but at that time, in the 50s, what was stressed was getting married, and that was the only purpose I saw in my life, and that's what I did. I went to Southern in order to get, a husband kind of thing.
In spite of that, though, did you have any early career interests while you were growing up?
Yes, I spent all kinds of time in the woods behind my house, and so that was a real love that I had, and I had clubs and oaths. I built forts back there. I also was very attached to animals, but had lots of animal shows and knew lots about taking care of cats and dogs and observing animals in the woods. And so
did you ever see taking any of that interest, though, and using it in a career when you were an adult?
Probably not. It was very repressive during that time, and I can remember when I was first told, I was an athlete too. I was very naturally gifted, I think, as an athlete, and when it came time for swimming and I became more of a teenager, I was so concerned about makeup at that time, and I started dropping back from being an athlete, and there were very clear verbal messages that being an athlete was being masculine, looking like Russian women throwing shot puts. I don't know, that was the image I had. And so I was extremely discouraged from being an athlete or being in the woods or thinking practically. I mean, it was just a very repressive, rural, conservative community. I was in the First Methodist Church, and I was in the choir, and I went to church camps, and I can remember my first political awareness. I was singing in the choir, and I saw a family, black family, come in. And I had been taught to love everybody and accept everybody, but when the black family came in the church, everybody, I could see from the choir loft how all of the white congregation moved away from the black family. And that was I knew that was wrong, and that was my first political awareness. Mm-hmm. Later, I was in a sorority.
Let me stop
yes,
you. Did you
sure.
try and talk to anybody about that situation in the church?
No. And another thing that happened is that I had an African-American boy call me. I can remember him. And we'd sit and talk for a long time. And my mother, even though she'd always told me to accept and love everybody, said, "Who is that boy?" And mm-hmm. and all this. And then I was pretty well, I not physically punished. I was never spanked and things like that, but I was emotionally very, very shamed mm-hmm. for that. And
did you belong to any girls' clubs or Girl Scouts, or did you ever go to mm-hmm. an all-girls school?
No, I didn't go to an all-girls school, but I belonged to the Girl Scouts and did some outdoor stuff with them, although that wasn't real successful. And again, even the Girl Scouts, or the Brownies actually at that time, were also very controlling and repressive. I can remember thinking how uncomfortable I was and how I wanted to get back to the woods and out where I knew things and, excuse me, felt more comfortable being free.
Had your parents gone to college?
My mother was almost a nurse, and she decided not to actually pass her exam from the University of Chicago because she was going to get married and wouldn't need it. My father went through a couple of years of college, but he, being German, was, I guess, a typical German patriarch and did not want his wife to work. He really fought against me going to college and would not pay my way, whereas he paid my brother's way. And I had to work through college and get scholarships, and he never really would support me in that or give me money.
Is his last name Zarina?
No, my father's name's Ballister. My father's name, yeah.
Okay. Because Zarini is not a German name.
That's my married name.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got it. Okay. Were there women or men, Mary, who might have influenced you toward feminism while you were growing up?
Not in the 50s, other than the intense restrictions were enough to motivate anybody. But even when I was in college and in a sorority, I was in Sigma Kappa, and my next political act really was I deactivated myself, because when I became an active in the sorority, I found out that when pledge time came, they would not take Jewish women or, of course, African-American women weren't even, like, it was all white, and as well as disabled women. And I deactivated after that. And I, as a result of that, my authorization at the university was pulled, and I had to pay off sorority debts because I didn't show up for things like the Greek Sing, so they would dock you or fine you for not going. They would also make it real hard if you didn't wear, like, heels, like 2-inch heels and things. But anyway, so I got docked a lot of money, plus just trying to stay in school and working my way. So it was really hard, but I did it and graduated.
And you finished, I believe, in 1965
from college,
major
undergraduate,
in
yeah.
Sociology.
Yes.
Did you go to Southern Illinois in 60, 61?
61 to 65, yeah.
Tell me, that's a fairly large university.
Mm-hmm.
What was your sense in terms of having blacks on campus at that point? Were there any?
And this, again, is, I'm sure, a very white perspective. I mean, I don't remember black students there.
Okay.
And that shows you where I was. I was in a sorority that was racist. I think I was very racist and classist. I mean, I was a product of the 50s by and large. And
what interested you in sociology?
I think it was just, again, college was so simple for me. It was so, but I didn't take anything that challenged me at all. I just took something in order to get through, in order to get a husband. And I was still doing that until graduate school. And the feminist movement changed my life. I mean, it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. But up until that point, I think I was a really classist, middle-class white woman.
Okay. Before feminism, though, were you involved in any civil rights activity?
Okay. Other than what I did, the political acts, like I said, on campus. And for a while, I thought I wanted to teach emotionally disturbed kids, but that the teacher thing was still like a wife teacher thing. And I'm trying to think. After I got out of undergraduate, then I got married right away. I don't remember thinking about it. I don't remember making a decision. It was just where it was.
Mm-hmm.
I was dating a man at that time who, it was like Animal House. He was like the ID checker at the Rumpus Room, which was a wild place to be in the 60s and early 60s. There was a big house where everybody partied. It was very much like the Animal House in the movie. And I don't know, I don't think I had my own identity at that point. I just did what I was taught to do.
But you still continued to work on your graduate degree?
Well, we got married, and then went to Milwaukee for a short time, then came to Louisville. And at that point, I was coming with my husband because that's where he wanted to come. And there was a graduate school here that I could go to in social work. I thought that would be. At that point, I think I was starting to. I went for a year without, by being very isolated in Milwaukee after I was married, and that was a huge disillusionment to begin with. And I thought, there's no way I can sit around like this and not do something. So that's when I started considering something helpful to society. So there was a graduate school here in Louisville, so we came here.
Tell me about your introduction to feminism.
Oh, I remember that very, very well. It was in 67, and several of us got together, several of us women, because I used to, when I was in groups, I would always hang out with the men because they were interesting and the conversation was stimulating. So we decided that we would get together and see if we could talk, just talk about anything but men or babies or recipes. So this was the first CR group in Louisville, to my knowledge. I'm pretty sure it was the first, and except we didn't call ourselves a CR group, we called ourselves a cell.
Cell.
C-E-L-L, like a prison.
Cell.
Cell. Now this was when we named ourselves, we called ourselves a cell. C-E-L-L, like a prison cell. And a lot of women all over the country were beginning to do that. Now at this point there was no publicity, there was no magazine, or then feminism wasn't a word. I mean, it was, there was nothing going on at that time, and no connection or networking of any kind that I was aware of.
Do you remember any of the women by name?
Oh, yeah.
Who were in the group?
Oh, yeah.
Can you?
There was Stephanie Eves and Linda Handorf, who was her sister, and then there was Leela, and I don't remember Leela's last name, and I was thinking about that before you came. And there was a Kathleen Davis, mm-hmm. and that was the original group. But we sat around and we talked about, we wouldn't let ourselves talk about those topics, like I said, but we learned to talk about other things, and we got to know each other, and we all found out that we had similar concerns, like we felt like we were going crazy, and we felt like there had to be more to life. We felt like we were being treated unfairly, like we were being condescended to all the time, that it wasn't fair. And why weren't we happy with the unfairness of laws and different things we began to notice? At the same time, the Black Civil Rights Movement was starting up. And we were all involved in the Black Civil Rights Movement as well. We started to be, because the consciousness kind of, for me, went to feminism, to Black Civil Rights, and then back to feminism. But
and at that point here in Louisville, you had a lot of action toward open housing.
Oh yeah, that I was in that huge.
And then you had a riot.
March, yeah, the riot, yeah. And I was involved in all of that. And when Kunstler came to town, Angela Davis was here in a little church over, you know, and we were in the Red Barn, and there were bomb threats, and it was amazingly terrifying. And each time we did an action, we really decided if we were ready to die or not. Because we really thought we would. I had death threats. I had people sending me like Russian communist flags. I was not a communist. I was a grassroots revolutionary in the United States. I was part of the Socialist Workers Party, and I the theology theory or the belief system of socialism and democracy, and you know, I had some kind of combination in my head at that time of that, and I was very much against capitalism. It was all about really changing the whole society, and we believed at that time we really could do that.
How big was the Socialist Workers Party here in Louisville?
It was over at that time, well actually it's where it still is, over in the Braden Center, and Carl was alive. I knew, met Carl a couple times. I didn't know him, but I met him, and Anne, of course, and so I was part of the Socialist Workers Party, but the problem then even was the sexism, and also in the Black Civil Rights Movement was the sexism. And I think the thing that really really capped it all off was when Stokely Carmichael said, the only place for the woman in the movement is prone, and it was like, well, there you go, how come, you know, it was like we saw things as a combination of oppressed peoples, and the idea was to combine, and that kind of was happening except for women. And women were still being used to do a lot of the grunt work, and were not the leaders, and a lot of sexual stuff was going on. And so that reinforced the feminism of realizing we were not being included, really.
I wonder, in all of that with the cell and your advocacy, if you had had the opportunity at that point to read Betty Friedan's The Feminine Mystique.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We got that right
Simone
away.
Simone de Beauvoir's
yeah.
The Second Sex.
That we consider that at the time to be pretty mild. Mm-hmm. We were like much more angry than that mm-hmm. and much more outraged with what was being done to everybody, particularly poorer women. We most of us brought our money at that time, our income, and put it in. We put all of our time and all of our money into the movement, into our behavior, our revolutionary behavior. We connected up with some of the attempts done in Hazard, Kentucky, and the unionizing of the mines and coal mines, and there were connections through Louisville there. We were involved in some of the draft dodging attempts. You know, some men who were coming through Louisville to Canada.
And this was all really under the auspices of the Socialist Workers' Party?
No, it was really under feminism, because we pulled out of that. We pulled out. It actually was our group, mainly. At one point, as things developed, we could see that the kind of changes we women were going through, that if we didn't include our husbands, that this would be really awful. So we included our husbands. One man was a Black Panther, and so we were all included in this like CR group of trying to develop political consciousness together. And at that point, it was called People's Liberation rather than feminism. That got kind of stuck on later.
Was that strictly a local, or was there a people's?
Yeah, by this time, yes, this was our
liberation
group.
That was now, national.
And we started realizing there were all these connections. And like when Kunstler came to town, we were called from Boston. Some women who had their own cell up there just called and said, "Look, this is what we witnessed here. Kunstler has women who comes in like prostitutes who come in after the fundraiser, after the party thing. So you might want to, if you want to, you could." Have a demonstration about that. So we went there, all of us. We went over there, and sure enough, in came two prostitutes, and we had a confrontation with Kunstler at that point, saying, what are you doing? How can you have a political consciousness like this and then use women like this? And you're married. I think he was married at that time. I know somebody else was married.
And tell me about that. How did he respond?
Well, he got real defensive, and he was denying. He kept walking away from us, and we kept at him, and he was depicting us as, I don't know what, as harpies or emotionally disturbed or didn't know what we're talking about or hurting the movement or hurting him because he was doing such good work. And that was always a conflict. It's like, how far do you confront a political activist? You don't want to take anybody down when there's so few of us to begin with, but yet that was so unethical and so basically
not okay. And how many of you were there to confront him?
I think the four of us were there, four or five of us.
Do you remember anybody?
It would be the same group, and probably all of us were there.
Okay.
Because I can remember Kathleen.
And were there others with Kunstler who were local guys in particular that sort of backed him up in any way?
Kunstler? Yeah, everybody. Most everybody did. Everybody kind of overlooked this. Mm-hmm. And everybody knew stuff was going on. And see, it was because sexism was such an integral part of male identity at that time. There really was no consciousness of anything. And they really didn't see that as not okay. Mm-hmm. I know they did. I mean, they know, infidelity and prostitution, I mean, that's kind of a obvious thing. But it was still ingrained in their consciousness. It took a while. I mean, feminists were really, really not welcome in the Black Civil Rights Movement for a long time and saw that as a, you know, to take away from the Black movement. And
now,
a lot of Black women experienced a lot of pressure not to be a feminist.
At this point in Louisville, I think there was a women's political, no, that came later.
Yeah, that came later.
Caucus.
See, there was no leadership. One of the things I was trying to think about when you came to interview me is that we didn't have leaders. There was not a hierarchical power. It was a communalism or collective idea of power. Whenever we later, okay, we were in the CR group for several years, and then we decided if we feel this way, and we're maybe other women feel this way. So we put out all these flyers around the university as well as everywhere we could think of, and we had so many women come to this meeting we couldn't even get in the door. And so what we did is we offered to help them set up their own CR groups.
Is that what the topic of the meeting was about?
Yeah, was this is, and we told them what we were doing, how we were thinking, and it was so, I mean, we were packed. We couldn't even get everybody in the doors.
Where did you hold this meeting?
It was down on Brook Street, and that's where we often met.
In an apartment,
Stephanie's apartment.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if the building's still there, but the Brook Street, that's the area where we always had our meetings, and also where we had a newsletter for a while out of our CR group. See, it was just that, and it was like CR groups were all over, but that's the way it was. There wasn't this connection or hierarchical thing going on yet at all.
So when the women came to learn more about the CR group,
right, then they formed their own.
Okay.
And then we really weren't very connected to them either. We just went ahead and did our thing. If they had trouble, we would be willing to go and help them get through, like if there's conflict in the group, and there was. I mean, it was difficult. See, our group was very intense, very emotional, it took hours processing, but, and then we had gone through that for several years, and so we wanted to go on and do what we were doing, our actions, activism, and not to spend a whole lot of time, and we thought women had to do it themselves in order to progress through the growth.
Tell me about the newsletter.
It was very, very, very political. It was very small print and very, 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 very revolutionary. I don't know. I looked for a copy. I couldn't find any copies of it. I did not publish it myself. I mean, I was in on, I read it and I oversaw some of it. I think it was mostly Kathleen and Stephanie, if I remember, who were doing the newsletter. I wasn't all for that. I didn't think it was a good thing to do. Because at that time I thought the less written and the less concrete, I thought it would be co-opted and used against us kind of thing, or that we'd waste our time doing that when I thought we should be doing activism. But, I mean, you know, I supported it because I was in the CR group. I mean, I could see the point of it. But.
Were the CR groups primarily to talk through issues, or were any of them in Louisville that you're aware of into some of the women's health, learning to use the speculum?
Didn't come late. That came later. At that time, it was all really, I mean, we were scared. I mean, we were saying stuff and doing stuff, that was just, and plus we were in the Black Civil Rights Movement at that time, and I mean, we were scared of the FBI. We were scared of being tapped. We were very, very scared. I mean, there were lots of things going on over the country at that time. There were riots and major arms buildup in every city in the United States at that time. And so the police were very active, I mean, in trying to figure out what was going on. So it was a real scary time.
The local
period.
Police?
Oh, yes.
How
everybody.
How did you know that?
Because they were, like in the Black Civil Rights, the demonstrations, they were all there photographed, and they were, I don't know, other than that, we knew the Klan were keeping track of us. The Klan would come in and come to meetings, like, of course, abortion became an issue. Early it wasn't, but, and Klan, one time, one woman was talking, and they came in the back door and stood against the wall, all the way across the back wall, and stood there.
And how did you know that they were Klan?
Well, they said they were.
Okay. They weren't dressed.
No, they weren't in Klan outfits.
No.
But I know. I remember when the Klan did march in Southern. Of course, they've marched lots of times here, but in Southern.
Were they local people, or
men?
Did they come in from Indiana?
I don't know.
Or somewhere?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
But there were. I can't even remember. There were all kinds of threats and spots that we thought, it'd be hard to know. The reason I'm saying this is in hindsight because I know what was done, because we got our files after Hoover was out, and Hoover was a real sick man. But once he was out and they opened up the files, we found out the infiltration of the FBI in Louisville and in the women's movement.
Do you all still have those files?
No, we don't even have our archives, I don't think. No.
That's too bad, because it's rich material.
Oh, it is. I left the country in 71 after I got out of graduate school, because I thought that, and my husband and I at that time had been real politically active, and we thought we were all going to be assassinated. You know, the Chicago demonstration happened, the police just beating everybody. I mean, the police were all over the country beating everybody up in riots and all kinds of ways that they did that, and we really thought that we were going to be killed. And so we left the country, and we stayed away in Europe for 6 months, And I couldn't stand it. I had to come back. You know, I felt like I, survivor's guilt, like I'd left the edge and left everybody. When I got back, it was getting, I don't remember now all, but I know it was getting intense, but everybody left. It was like Linda moved to Michigan, Leela went to California. Everybody pretty well dispersed, and this is when Nixon came in.
Okay. Let me go back just a minute, because you mentioned that Angela Davis had been here. Tell me about that.
Well, she was at a church in the West End, and we couldn't, most of us couldn't even get in.
Because it was
so packed, absolutely packed. There were, and if I remember right, there was a bomb threat on the church, and everybody stayed, as we all did in the Red Barn. And all I can remember is that she just spoke the truth of what I could hear of it, because I crammed myself in the back.
And this would have been approximately
I don't know. It must have been sometime in the late 60s.
Because
when I, or maybe when I, because I was in graduate school, 71 is when I left for, or maybe 71, 72, when I left for Europe.
Okay.
So it had to have been between 67. later.
Was your, tell me your husband's name.
Bob.
Serene.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was he supportive of your feminist?
Oh, yeah. And he was in his own, because what happened after, we tried to combine the two groups and it didn't work because the women were already so bonded that they decided they needed to learn how to bond themselves. So the men started their own group, and then so they were in a group together. And anyway, but he, excuse me, he became very politically aware.
Okay. How about your parents? Were they aware of your activities?
Not at all. Okay. My father a little bit, and because I used to take books home to him. Like I can remember one time taking Black Rage. Because my whole point, see, I became a feminist psychotherapist because at that time it was so oppressive. I mean, probably the mental health and religious institutions were the most oppressive institutions there were for women. And, you know, like the tranquilizers came out in the 1920s, right when women got the vote. I don't think that, and I think drugs came into the whole nation in the 60s, and I don't think that was, I think that was too coincidental. Although Timothy O'Leary at one point was real, I think, instrumental in consciousness raising. It wasn't about abusing drugs, it was about consciousness expansion with drugs, and it was, I think, at the beginning, it was a real politically good thing to do. It helped people think outside the box, the 50s and box, really. But then later it became, I think, drugs were just used, abused, or for fun rather than for any kind of consciousness expansion.
When you came back, Mary, from Europe,
yes.
What happened then?
I came back and decided that I would be more like a reformist rather than a revolutionary, so I decided I would go in the system and try to change it from the inside out. So I went out to Pee-wee Valley and became the associate superintendent out there.
What kind of a place is Pee-wee
Valley? It's where all the felons in Kentucky go, women who are felons. It's the Women's Correctional Institute. Yeah, women's prison. And I was acting warden for the first month I was there. Because the person, Betty Kosalke, had left to something else. And so, and the person who was there at that time was just, had kind of locked himself in his office. And I came in very idealistic and very gung-ho, and thinking that a lot of political prisoners were going to end up in Pee-wee Valley. In fact, they went to Lexington Compound, but at that time I thought they would. So I was going to be there at the prison and help move things through and not let them get killed or whatever I thought was going to happen. So, and I don't even know how I got in the prison and the prison system to be an employee.
Let me stop and turn the tape over here.
Okay.
Tell me what kind of women would have been political prisoners.
Well, at that time, different women from different groups were robbing banks and, you know, were involved, and I was never in any illegal behavior other than demonstrations, and I used to give lots of lectures and organize and stuff like that, but I never committed, you know, felonies or misdemeanors, although, yeah, anyway, but that, But some of the women were going on and trying to get money and trying to make statements and so forth, because it was so repressive at that time. It's like the only thing that seemed to get any attention, both to the Black Civil Rights Movement as well as the women's movement, was acting out somehow, illegal acting out, civil disobedience or war. So that's where I, and I thought women were just going to be arrested when Nixon came in. I just thought they were going to be taken out. As it was, a lot of leadership in the Black Civil Rights Movement and the feminist movement was really co-opted, and a lot of Black leaders were killed, or they were co-opted one way or the other. But the whole movement was taken down.
When you say that, is that true in Louisville as well as nationally?
A lot of the Black Civil Rights leaders here, it seems like to me, that's a hard one. I don't know as well, because I started pulling back from Black Civil Rights. I know Carl Braden, of course, died later and continued on, but so much support withdrew from the Blacks. You know, I'm guessing a lot of the Black leadership left, and I know the Black Panthers dissolved here in Lowell. Mm-hmm. And it got all messed up, and I don't know why. I don't know if it was infiltrated, so it was internally sabotaged. I don't know. I really don't know.
How big was the Black Panthers here at their height?
The Black Panther member of our group would not, he didn't say.
Okay.
So, but I heard off and on stuff that was going on.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But they were also about, like, getting kids lunches and trying to organize the community, and that was the main thing. I really think the Black Panthers were pumped up in the white press as a way to target them, and so that they were taken out justifiably so. When in fact, I think Black Panthers were meant to be like the Million Man March of, self-esteem for Black men and community concern. So, it all got so redefined and in order to justify, I think, what happened.
Were you ever arrested?
Not until recently. And I was in a civil disobedience thing where we all sat down in the street, and they walked us into the police department, took our name, and sent us back out.
What was the issue?
That was for the fairness issue.
Oh, okay.
The ordinance trying to get, rights protection for work, social, and living for lesbians, gay, transgender, bisexual people.
Okay. Let me go back, because I believe you were involved with the big conference in Houston.
I was an alternate delegate to that,
from
Kentucky, and then I replaced somebody who couldn't go or something happened, so I became a delegate down there,
mm-hmm.
And that was really exciting.
Well, tell me about that. I was actually there.
Were
myself
you?
From North Carolina,
yeah.
But what was your perspective on it?
It was exciting, but from the background I came from, it felt, I was frustrated out of my mind because there was nothing to it. We were making public statement, essentially. But the things that blew me away is that when I was flying into, it was Houston, right? Yeah, Houston. That there was this big article that showed a little girl with a little purse hanging on her wrist and a church window behind her, and she's in a prayer on her knees kind of thing, and it says, "Do you want her to become a lesbian?" And so they characterized all of the women in Houston because of this conference going on. Women were all over the United States, and they characterized this as a lesbian event. And I just thought, oh, they're really stretching on this one. So,
well, tell me about the Kentucky delegation.
Okay, one of the things I remember is that Thelma Stovall was there, flew in her jet with some women, and that she went in the bathroom and she saw, I guess, two women embracing and was ready to take her jet and fly home or something. I don't know, but there wasn't a whole lot of consciousness, and there was a lot of exclusion, I think, of lesbians at that time. It's like, don't mess up our movement with your, your lesbian identity thing, because that's, everybody who became a feminist was called lesbian. And in the first CR group I was in, there were no lesbians. And as far as I don't know, and later lesbians came into the movement, and then we had to deal with that issue and get through all of our own homophobia. But at that time it was still, and balloons, a lot of lesbians who were at the convention had balloons like, "We are everywhere." And we had those orange bands on, or I didn't, but yes, I did. We had orange bands on protesting Anita. What's her name down in Florida with the orange juice?
Oh, yeah.
Bryant. Right. Anita Bryant, because she was so homophobic. And, of course, come to find out, you know, she was very drugged. Later we found out and was being physically abused by her husband. And so all of that was bizarre because at that time she was so saying all these really hateful, homophobic things. And
now, at the time of the Houston conference, though, were you lesbian at that point, or had you decided you
were? Let's see. What year was that?
77.
Yes, I had come out in 75,
okay.
And that was a political decision for me at that time, mm-hmm. because I had been in women's community, and I had gotten a divorce in 72 when we got back from Europe. Mm-hmm. I think it was spending 6 months, 24 hours a day with one person. I think we both went screaming. We stayed in a van. A Volkswagen van toured, went all over Europe. Anyway, but Bob and I really separated on really good terms. And at that time, I was straight and was dated men. But I still stayed in at the prison and doing political work there. Then I got out of the prison and went to really started in earnest my career as a feminist psychotherapist to offer. And I worked at the drug abuse center after the prison, and I started, lots of women started coming to me saying, would you please work with me? You know, I feel like I'm going crazy, and I don't think it's me. I think it's a reaction to, because there's a certain amount of depression, anxiety, lots of psychological effects from oppression and sexism that have nothing to do with a woman's intrinsic mental health. I mean, it's a normal reaction, just like any oppressed people have psychological reactions to oppression. Low self-esteem. I mean, it's not you name the symptoms women have, and understand, unless you understand the context, that you blame the victim. And not to mention all the sexual abuse that was going on there, both to women and children. And so that, at that point, had not been revealed, how much stuff was going on. Because I really think sexual abuse in this country is used to control women. It's so prevalent. I mean, you know, there's estimates like 2 to 3 out of 4 women are sexually abused before they're 18, and you know, that's probably accurate. Where that's not what is said. I think it's like 2 out of 4.
There in Kentucky at the time of the 1977 meeting or afterwards, were there lesbian feminist groups that were beginning to come together?
We had. Let's see. I came out in 75. Then. Because it just made sense. At that point, I felt the socialization of men that I would, and I was in, I felt really good relationships with really good men, but we always hit this wall where there was a power differential or an identity thing or whatever. And then I'd always have to get into this whole feminism, you know, fight and raise consciousness. And anyway, so eventually I decided that I was very close to women anyway, emotionally. And that's really what was so important, was the intimacy or the emotional connection, that I could really talk with other women and be close. So I decided that I'd put all my energy, including sexual. And at that point, I had not been sexually attracted to women. But I think it's a learned behavior like anything else. Let's see, I can't remember the question.
Were there any formal groups or organizations?
Then we formed Mother's Brew.
Mother's Brew.
Which was down Main Street. And what it was like a community center for women, and particularly for lesbians. And I can't remember when this was, but what happened is there was big controversy in the feminist movement about lesbianism. And so we made a big effort to include lesbians. And then we had all of these big parties. And at one point I know we nicknamed it the LFU, FLU, the Future Lesbians of America. And there were 6 of us in this group deciding if we were lesbian. We discuss it. Then we go out, we'd have experiences. And by that I mean we would dance or play. It wasn't sexual. A lot of it wasn't sexual for a long time.
Sort of like Future Homemakers.
Right, something like that. So we did this. I don't know, process. Everything took 5 million hours, you know, to process and have everybody's feelings okay before we could go on. No wonder we didn't get very far. But Anyway, but we eventually formed Mother's Brew, and that was like, it was incredible. Oh, that's right, because I photographed in Houston. I have a whole photograph thing. So I showed my photographs with the music Bread and Roses going on, mm-hmm. and I showed all the photographs I'd taken to the women. And I used to do lots of photography, like photojournalism as well as creative photography, reflecting women's reality or lesbian reality or everybody's reality, all women's reality. But I used to have slideshows down at Mother's Brew. We had dinners down there. We had bands came in at that point. This is all underground, but who sang lesbian lyrics or women's lyrics or women's concerns. Because the idea of being lesbian wasn't separated from feminism in my mind at that point. So it was like all of women's concerns. And it was very related to nature and not capitalism. It was all about communalism or collective, you know, and lack of classism, no racism. I mean, we really tried to create a counterculture that was loving. That was our goal, and inclusive. And anyway, but we had dinners, and we had poetry readings, we had pool and ping pong competitions. How's that for capitalism? But anyway,
How did you find the resources to keep this place going?
We all put in money. We just put in money into it. And bunches of us put in money.
And you know, at on a good night down there,
It'd be packed.
Yeah, which would be, what, how many people?
Maybe 150, because we had, it was a huge upstairs area. Let's see. I'm trying not to exaggerate. The building's gone. The whole thing's gone. But the building was pretty big. I mean, the area upstairs was huge because, like, we had separate rooms for pool, ping pong, and a huge room for the dancing area where the band was, and other side rooms, like a side thing. It was a huge area. So I don't know, maybe 150 women. It would be packed. On Saturday nights, we'd all go there and dance, and we'd dance in big groups. You see, at that point, the lesbian community was more like a community. It wasn't like individual women or partners living around or a couple partners being together. It was like a whole community identity. So coming out as a lesbian at that point was like coming out in a community of women. The sex was not even, wasn't the significant part of being lesbian at that point. It really was political stuff. Now, in the meantime, the pioneers, probably, of lesbian movement, the so-called bar dykes, they were, of course, they are the women who were beaten, and they were really oppressed. And we were real busy in trying to include, fight for their rights, and be inclusive of them, too. But there was friction between bar dykes and feminist lesbians, and that was really too bad. But there was, because in some ways, the bar dyke, butch femme thing was sexist. If we saw it as being sexist. And a lot of women saw that as not being sexist, but just the way we were. But a lot of women I felt had identified now, young, or... But that's still... I'm not sure I even think that anymore. I don't know what I think, but...
Were there ever any meetings of the two groups to sort of talk through issues?
Yes, we tried to invite women to come in, and they wouldn't feel comfortable. We'd go where they were, and we wouldn't feel comfortable. There'd be fights, and... It was rough. It was real rough. I can remember there was a Queen Bee bar downtown, which was a lot of lesbians went there, and I went in there. There was a lot of drinking and fights and bottle throwing, and I was like, I don't belong here at all. I'm out of here. There were other bars around town, but it was rough. And a lot of women, in my opinion, were being very self-destructive, and in part because they were oppressed.
And at the same time, Mary, what was going on with gay men?
Well, I went to a gay liberation meeting at U of L campus back in 74 or 75. And at that point, now of course we've united, but at that point the men were very, 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 very sexist. And they were making really rough comments about women. And so I think there was separatism for quite a while. But gradually that began to change. I wasn't as much a part of that as I was over in the lesbian community, but that began to change, and there were lots of women, lesbians, who were involved with gay men and starting to build. And I can remember the first time a lesbian couple tried to get married in Mobile. Dan Taylor was their attorney. And, what year was that? Oh, I remember demonstrating downtown for that. That must have been, it had been the 70s. And all they did is they just laid it aside and they wouldn't deal with it. And this couple would, and they're still here in Louisville.
You mean
the attorney, the law, the court,
right,
or whatever,
right,
whoever laid it aside, it just got shelled out. It wasn't even dealt with. And Dan Taylor fought it like crazy. And then now, of course, recently it came back up again, and we were down in Frankfurt testifying that it isn't legal not to let us get married.
At what point do you think that men and women came together?
Well, what I saw, of course, this is all from my view, and I know lots of other things were going on I wasn't aware of, but it was through the Fairness Campaign. And at that point, there was a real organized, although, no, that's not true. Before that, there was, I think it was Lambda. I can't remember the names of everything. There was a lot going on, but it seemed like they were really the pioneers. And then Fairness came out of that early, and those are some folks that I think that should be interviewed, because they really took a lot of abuse from everybody. The men and women that were involved. I'm not comfortable giving you the names. And
but
I'm sure they're pretty out.
But that were involved in the beginning?
Yes,
in
Lambda and some of the other...
Okay.
No, before Fairness.
Before, okay.
Yeah, before Fairness.
Tell me what role the AIDS epidemic had here in terms of the gay community.
That's a hard one for me to answer. I'm not sure. I know what it did to other cities better than I do what happened
and
to
and that's
Louisville.
Really what I'm registering from in some places. What happened is that many of the lesbian women became very active.
Became a lot of the caretakers.
And
that happened here too, not in a more organized way. I know that Jack Kearsey and some other gay men really, took a lead on some things. And I know there was, what's the community center? The community, anyway. But that is, there was some rough stuff going on there that didn't quite pan out right. I'm not talk about that, but where I was, I didn't, as a therapist, I saw gay men and encouraged them to get tested and dealt with their diagnosis. And so as a therapist, I saw that. But in the community, I'm not clear on how many lesbians really, if there was a big shift over to take care. What I do know, though, is that we had a breast cancer event fundraiser where gay men did not show up. And we felt real hurt by that, because a lot of us had, directly or indirectly, been helpful, not as an organized thing, but and that wasn't reciprocated.
How recent was that?
Yes, it's been years ago.
Okay.
Still years ago. Because it's changed a lot. Fairness, I think, has changed a lot. Blended our communities better, at least for political targets.
How old actually is Lambda and then the Fairness?
Fairness...
Are we talking about 70s or
80s? No,
or?
Fairness didn't... To me, Fairness is recent.
Yeah,
but
right.
That's because
and
of my perspective.
I just moved to Kentucky. Two
okay, it's only been
ago,
what...
So.
I know that we've tried to get the ordinance through for 11 years, so, and I know that the first attempts were long before Fairness. Was several years before Fairness, so I guess it's been, 8 or 10 years or something like that Fairness has been in existence, and I'm not sure about that. But Fairness is a targeted one ordinance focus. It's very mainstream, it's very reformist. I mean, it's that's what that is.
Mm-hmm. And Lambda?
That was much more, I think, comprehensive and included a lot more issues, and I don't know enough to say. I think that
is
was real early. I imagine it is in other cities. To my knowledge, I don't think it is in Mobile, and I don't know.
Tell me about roles of men and women in Lambda. Do you remember them? Did women play leadership roles?
Yes, I think more so, at least here in Mobile. The woman was one of the main organizers here in Mobile.
Okay. How about with the Fairness?
That has been a lot of very strong, confident women. I think the two founders of it were women. And then there's been, like in a lot of cities, what has happened in some cities is that I know, for instance, in Minneapolis, is that after things were set up by women, the gay men came in and kind of took it over, and they were sexist and kind of the same old, which is what we fought in the feminist movement, and then a lot of those values were not brought forward in the lesbian movement, which I think is too bad. But in Louisville, I think that sexism was battled more so that the actual power was more diverse. Mm-hmm. And that I think that's been a really good thing in Louisville. Okay. The balance has been better here.
Let me go back and just ask you, were you active with VRA at all?
Oh, yeah. Well, everybody was.
And the
we marched in Washington.
Guess, the, yeah.
Yeah. And okay. It was, again, it was like, I felt like, oh, you know, like Susan B. Anthony and those women, because the vote, it was like getting the vote, and the vote was such a small part of the whole movement that it was just kind of like, it's almost, oh, yeah, mm-hmm. but it's kind of a little thing tagged on almost, like the ERA is like, oh, yeah, but there's so many huge issues. So when you funnel it all down to the ERA, but yeah, we were all part of that and felt that was just fundamental, and we, even to get that. Kind of thing, much less all the change that we really saw necessary.
And then there was a fairly large effort, I guess, when it looked like Kentucky might rescind.
Oh yes, that was an event and a half, where the governor left, flew out of town, so Thelma could stop the rescission
right.
of
right.
the. Yeah, that was quite interesting. That was really good.
I've actually been back and looked at a lot of those articles, and I interviewed Allie Hickson a few weeks ago.
Yeah, well, that one was great.
Yeah.
I mean, I really respected her a lot, even though she was going to fly home. But
well,
we all have our boundaries,
all
I guess.
The same year, I think.
Yeah, oh, it was wild. It was really wild. We were in Frank, we were in Washington, we were all over the place all the time, you know.
Tell me about the pro-choice effort here.
Well, in the beginning, that was huge. I mean, that was like, it was more than a pro-choice per se. It was like, of course, women's control of their bodies, but that had to do with all health issues. It had to do with civil rights. It had to do with everything. So that's how we all saw it. And for that matter, I still see it that way today, that if we lose Roe versus Wade, that we have lost a lot more than that. It's going to be a lot of civil rights for women. So,
were there organizations, though?
Oh, yeah,
that
yeah. And
can
we
remember
all
names?
That was part of oh boy it was before,
for example, was NARAL, did they have a chapter in Kentucky?
not early that I remember. I mean, now it was an issue of now. I remember before now, of course, and then when now was formed, it was one of the issues for now. I don't remember what else
the
was going
Kentucky
on.
Kentucky Civil Liberties Union.
Yeah, I'm sure they had that going, mm-hmm. but I don't
okay.
remember. I probably do, but I can't think of it right now.
Right, but Planned Parenthood or
I don't know if they were in existence at that time, or they may have been. I just didn't know
okay.
it. I don't know much about it. I know as I marched for it and fought for it and got very criticized for it, and I used to give lectures about how religion was sexist as well as a control of his body, because it all kind of went together. Boy, did I ever get into all kinds of controversy.
Who did you give those lectures
oh,
to?
Oh, women's groups, and oh, there was this, when I was in graduate school and I was doing an internship, they had this community forums, and at that time, and I would go to these community forums, and I was a leader on them, and I'd bring up all these topics to discuss, and then we'd get into it. I can remember talking at JCC, and of course the NOW meetings used to be packed. We would have like a couple hundred women there. I mean, they were huge, and we would present programs. And then I did things, like I did workshops and programs like, assertiveness training, and just talks about feminism and depression and mental health and feminism, and I did lots of that. I went to churches, which, you know, then I was not probably asked back. And I remember one time a priest was real upset with me. What else did we do? I remember one time in Frankfurt that, and I think I can say Lucy Freibert was there, and we were at this thing about abortion or pro-choice, and this crowd gathered around Lucy as she was leaving, and they were like spitting on her and chanting her vows back to her as a nun and all this stuff because she had supported things they didn't think she should. And I can remember another woman, you know, because I'm 5'8", and another big woman, and I kind of, she was still trying to reason, and she was really getting, I was worried she was going to get physically hurt. So we kind of got on either side of her, kind of walked her escorted her out of there. It was pretty intense. All
this
time.
Would have been a rally in Frankfurt.
This was before we went to Houston.
Okay.
It was a meeting when we all delegate meeting before we went to Houston, something like that.
How did women's groups raise money for their issues?
Well, we didn't. It was just our own money.
Okay.
And that we didn't even think like that.
Okay. So no fundraising.
Not back then.
Okay. Even the Now chapter. They host benefits or concerts.
Not that I remember. I can't remember because I know that fundraising and even with Fairness, that's been institutionalized, like actual fundraising has been institutionalized in the last several years. But even before that, it was like donations or that you see the need and you know you need to do that in order for somebody else to go someplace or for all of us to have gas to get in the car to go to Frankfurt. That's the way.
Are you still active with Now? And is Now even active?
No, I haven't been active with Now for a long time. And part of the falling out was when the whole lesbian straight split happened, and a lot of the politics of Now I had trouble with, and felt they were way too compromised and moderate, and I don't know. I think anything's good. If we can do anything, right. Like stay alive, that's good. But at that time, I pulled way away from Now.
Okay. What about women's involvement around employment or labor union issues? Were there elements in town?
Yes, there were definitely union organizers that were all part of the underground because they were being really messed over. Like the couple that were in, I think it was Hazard, where they broke into their house and found so-called communist literature around, and they were trying to arrest folks on all kinds of reasons and ways, and they would come through Louisville and what was like, again, like an underground railroad for a lot of different people, so they were kept in our houses. And there was lots of movement that way. I saw some of and talked with a lot of people, but you know, I didn't have direct connection with it, but I...
Okay. Who led, if you know, the effort to eliminate sexist classified ads, or... Do you remember those in the employment section of the paper?
Oh,
where they
yeah.
used to have mail?
No, I don't know. Because, see, I pulled back out of the so-called feminist movement at that time when I went into the lesbian movement. So my life changed a whole lot.
Okay.
I became an activist in the lesbian community, and part of that was separatism, and so I was into that for quite a while because I couldn't see it. And to me our whole government and our whole politic of our country was really going backward fast, and with war and all of it, the programs for the poor, I mean it was just going back, and I couldn't see a way to function within the system.
Okay.
And I was devastated, I think, by Kennedy's death and Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and all the rest of the deaths that happened after that. I just so I pretty well stayed in private practice. And
did you continue with Socialist Workers Party?
No, because I that and communism, as much as I knew about at that time, I thought was also very not okay and male dominated and all that.
I want to ask you a few things just because I want to try and document best that we can other things that might have been going on here in Louisville. Mm-hmm. Was there a woman's bookstore, for example?
Oh yeah, there have been off and on several.
Do you remember anything about the early ones?
Jeez. I can't even remember where they were. We had centers here too.
Okay.
Community act, I mean, see Jack Kiersey had a center, a building he ran it over in Germantown, I think it was. What were the other centers? Oh, I'm sorry, I can't remember. And women opened up bookstores, but they couldn't make them go. And then once the big retailers came through, then that pretty well wiped that out. So everybody now, like there's lots of bookstores like in Minneapolis and other places, women order their books if they don't want to go through the big ones. But I can't remember. I know we had a library for a long time. And then we had a house on Brook Street where we had another library, and we had meetings, and that's when we had the gynecological, you know, checkouts. We had health. We were getting very concerned about health, women's health, because there were no studies, or there was really no difference. I mean, women weren't considered in health research at that time, and so we figured that one out, and Bodies Ourselves book was out, and we were trying to figure alternative health at that time. But we had a house, again, on Brook Street, but we had the whole house, and we had, and women stayed over there who were being abused, as because there were no, or very few shelters, if any. I don't think there were any at that point. And that wasn't recognized as a concern.
Right. But that came later, late 70s, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Along with the displaced homemaker.
Yes, that's right,
whatnot.
Yeah. And again, all the different cities were lurching around at different levels, and I didn't know what other communities were doing necessarily or not, but this is where we were.
Was there ever a feminist newspaper here?
Let's see, the Now thing, what else was there? Yes, we had we published poetry, lesbian poetry books. We had a publishing thing here a little bit. It was very small scale, but we published pamphlets and things and handed them out. And we had a newspaper. Jeez, I wish I'd checked this out better before I came here. But yes, we had a newspaper.
Did you ever seek political office?
No.
Why not?
I wouldn't. To me, it's... No. I could feel like I can do more political change through myself as a therapist and to offer women a healthy opportunity to grow, and also through art. I used to do a lot of political, hopefully consciousness raising through art. I also think I'm a really good public speaker, or at least I used to be. I haven't done that for a while. But in the last, I think my last big attempt was I had been involved in a $300 acre project of trying to build a center for women to come to, who are playwrights and activists who needed a break, a retreat. And so it was down near Springfield, Kentucky, and we had 300 acres plus three houses. We were building, we renovated two old houses and built another one, and we were in the process of making this a huge center. And for that, for a retreat for women, lesbians and straight women to come.
And what happened?
And we worked on it 5 years, 4 years, I don't know, it just kind of fell apart. My relationship with the woman I was with at that time fell apart, and I think we exhausted. We were so close. And it's just like, and then since then I've been trying to figure out where I am. And now I'm kind of an older lesbian in the community. trying to understand that, you know, I'm almost 60, that does make me that, so, and beginning to connect in with other women, because there aren't a lot of older lesbians who are very out anymore. And I was in the first wave of pretty out folks that, other than, of course, the Bardikes were the pioneers and the real...
We talked about the 77 Women's Conference, but... Were there any statewide networks on women's issues in Kentucky during this time? Or were there active groups outside of Louisville, like in Lexington?
I know in Lexington they had a lot of things, a lot of stuff going on there. But when this kind of organization started, I was out, because I felt that it was like part of the establishment.
Okay.
And I did not think any real growth would take place. I thought it would be assimilated and then neutralized, and we wouldn't make any real political change or movement at that time.
Okay.
So,
last question. What do you think the modern women's movement accomplished in Kentucky?
Oh, geez. I think we accomplished amazing things. Certainly psychologically we did. We really opened women's minds, I hope, to think. And to know and have a more self-esteem. But I have watched, it almost feels almost like we're back to the 50s again. It just is breaking my heart. And political consciousness, young women on campus, and I taught women's studies and I taught some other things for a while. it's just such a turnaround, it makes me really sad. So I see a lot of women assume certain rights. They just feel it's just there, and they don't understand that that didn't used to be, but that they don't have to. They can just go ahead and assume it and just keep going. There's still a lot of women in more alternative careers and but I just hope it doesn't turn all the way back around. You know, there's been, I don't know how many women's movements in the 1840s, and of course it culminated kind of with the vote in 1920, and before that, I mean, and I think we went through another huge wave of it, and unfortunately I think we're gonna, and I thought maybe when Clinton came in we would pick up and it might happen, but talk about confusing. I mean, Clinton makes me feel crazy, because on one hand he's so phenomenal, on the other hand he was so hurtful.
Go back, Mary, and tell me about teaching women's studies.
I taught at JCC and
that's Jefferson
Community College. And okay. What else did I do during that time?
What period were you teaching?
How did
women's studies come about at Jefferson, if you knew?
I don't know who. I think one of the professors there was instrumental in getting the class going, and then I was asked to teach it, and I was already teaching like modern sociology and introduction to whatever it was, sociology or modern social problems. But anyway, the women's studies program was really good because there were three of us. I was doing the sociology of women, another woman was doing literature, and another woman was doing what? Anyway, it was a three.
Maybe history or something.
Yeah, maybe that was it. But and we did a three-section thing, and it was packed. We had hundreds of students, and so they got to take different. We had big lectures, and then we broke the group down into smaller groups, so that we could. And I thought it was really good. Good.
So you team taught basically.
Yeah, yeah, and it was fun. It was really fun. Sharp women and.
Do you remember?
It was real stimulating. No, I don't remember the other two women.
In what period are we talking about?
Oh, geez, here we go again. I know it was in private practice, because I went to private practice in 70. I think it was 3 or 4, and I've been in private practice since then. And I was teaching. It must have been about that same time period. I know there were Vietnam vets in there. There was all the controversy of when they came back and the pain. And I saw a lot of Vietnam vets in therapy, too. And
Is there anything else you want to add to this interview?
I don't know. I just hope that a lot of, you know, women and younger women understand their history. Because if that gets lost, our identity gets lost, and our self-esteem, I think, goes down. And we just have to know, so we don't keep reinventing the wheel. And when women literally have died for this, and in all kinds of ways. And that I would just like women to understand their context and understand themselves in their political context, so they can see.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.